This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
It also removed the February 15th annual deadline for the local delegate assemblies to nominate such at-large candidates. This amendment will be voted on by the Pacifica National Board at its June 2nd through 4th meeting in New York, and also by each station's delegate assembly, three of which must pass it by majority vote of their members. For the full text of this amendment, go to pacifica.org or call 713-526-4000 and ask to have a copy sent to you. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And it is a rather hot Monday in Houston, with Florida getting some rain from the first tropical storm of the year.
And what was his name?
Alberto.
Oh. Well, I knew an Alberto once.
Mm-hmm.
Enough said about that.
Well, I would have liked it twice, but once was...
Oh, now,
I'm sorry.
I told you to stop it. You're listening to the June 12th edition of Queer Voices here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston and 89.5 in Galveston. We'll talk with Max Puente about his upcoming artwork being shown. Ellie and Jennifer will talk to Corbin of TrannyBoy.com and about his life as a trans man. Blue House will be in the house. These amazing Aussie performers will perform live in the studio and be at the Mucky Duck tomorrow night. Plus, we'll have commentary, community events, news, This Way Out, music, and more. I'm Deborah Bell.
This is Jennifer Renee.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And so, once again, because it's Pride Month, Jack is busy doing things that he does as executive director of Pride. And we say, okay, you can go do that. And we are going to be talking to Max Fuente, who is a young artist, up-and-coming artist in Houston. And Max and I met in a bar.
At a bar.
Can you believe it?
Love it.
I've heard that about you.
Strangely enough, we were introduced by my ex-girlfriend.
Isn't that amazing?
It is how those connections work. But it was the opening of the Blur Bar, which I'm still trying to understand why it's named that.
I know why.
Because you get blurred. But it's hard to say, Blur Bar. But it was fun. It was a fun evening. Lots of folks came out. The Lesbians in Progress were there with their kickoff event and a bunch of other folks. I mean, I saw every kind of folk there. And there was this wonderful artwork up on the wall. And Max was introduced to me, and they said he was the artist of the work. So is that still showing there at Blur? If someone goes over there, they can see some of your stuff?
Yes, it is still up there up until Saturday. I'm going to have new pieces up there. And that's actually going to be the introduction to my Lashes and Lights theme.
Lashes and Lights.
Lashes and Lights.
I love that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like an interesting theme.
What's involved with the theme? How'd you get that theme?
Well, because when I was young, I always had, and up until my adulthood, I always had this fascination with eyes. I love eyes.
He has beautiful eyes, too.
Thank you. I used to doodle eyes, but not doodle on eyes.
I'm sorry. We were being so serious here. Well, you know.
Okay. I'm a doodler, so I understand. Okay. You would draw people's eyes.
Yeah. So I always had a fascination with that, and I wanted to kind of experiment with that in my artwork. And on top of that, I love lashes, obviously. Mm-hmm. And
as in eyelashes.
Eyelashes, not being lashed. No.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thanks for that clarification.
We do have to be careful around here.
Yes, we do. And also the whole aspect of light, mm-hmm. because light's energy, and it's on a mystical level, it's all around us. So I kind of wanted to put those two together. And Eyes are the Window to the Soul.
Right.
So there's a deeper meaning behind that. But
right.
On a physical level, I think it's...
Well, have you always lived in Houston?
No, actually, I am from San Antonio,
mm-hmm.
and I grew up there. I was actually conceived, I think, in Corpus. But
then there was a move.
There was a move, and I actually moved here with my boyfriend at the time,
uh-huh.
and that didn't work out.
But we got you here. That's what's important.
But you know what? I am so glad about that, because had I not made this move, there would have been a lot of things that I would not have experienced here in Houston or anywhere. So I'm thrilled that I
there you
got
go.
Is that reflected in your artwork? Your experiences here in Houston?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And have you always been an artist? I mean,
in my mind, yes, I have been. I always had these great ideas, and I'm being a Pisces. I like to dream a lot, so my mm-hmm. head is always in the clouds. And after I started learning a little bit more that you need to make the connection between the idea and something physical
mm-hmm.
and to produce something, and I enjoy my work. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from my friends and family and just people.
So did you go to school for art?
Actually, I did not.
Oh, self-taught.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And now, is it photography?
It is.
Because, I mean, I couldn't really tell.
Yeah, it's based off of photography. So the photographs are like my canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to go from there. It's like I can look at something and just like, get images in my head, and that's when I just go to work.
Uh-huh. And so then do you use paint, or do you grab computers?
It's digital artwork.
Uh-huh.
And thank God for it. I'm telling you, I know some people are good at painting and drawing. I just think that this happened at the perfect time.
Yeah. So. Well, my oldest son, as you know, is an artist. And when he went to college, he had to do his work study in the computer lab. And so, actually, he became quite expert with computers. But before that, he was like, oh, they're evil, they're bad, I'm an artist, you know, a paint, a brush, a pencil, whatever, a piece of rock that I can sculpt. But you know, oh, a computer. And then I said, you know, it's just a tool, just like that paint. Brush or the pencil.
Absolutely.
And when he started looking at it that way, then, you know, he too does a lot of work using the computer.
Yeah.
And it also is really helpful to be able to show the world your work and to work with, like if you're trying to get it promoted.
Right.
And
right.
They want to see samples, you can say,
exactly.
here comes that JPEG, right to you there. So do you do any self-portraits?
Actually, a lot of my work is self-portraits.
Yeah, I notice a lot of my son's work, there's characters that look suspiciously like him.
What was it, what was that character that he...
Well, he does Caveman Robot, but there's several others that...
The one that was on that...
I don't know. Well, you looked at the website.
Yeah, it's great. Your son's artwork is amazing.
Thank you. Do you, besides yourself as a subject, what other kinds of things might one see?
I do. I started to take pictures of objects and certain things from a certain point of view. Just anything that I find, you know,
catches
interesting.
Your eye.
Yeah, catches my eye. And I also do other people as mm-hmm. well, my friends, and I just, in a way, it's like I want to make them. Mm-hmm. Awesome, you know, or something that I see them that they don't see.
Well, if someone wanted to commission you to do their portrait, how would they contact you?
And yes.
So you do that.
I do that. I do custom.
How would they get in touch with you?
You can actually email me at madstarwonder, it's all one word, madstarwonder, @AOL.com.
Oh, okay.
And actually, I did get commissioned this month, actually last month, to do some exclusive work for Rickshaw next
cool,
month.
Right. Well, that's
very
wonderful.
Cool.
I'm really excited about that.
And do you think that not having formal training has been an asset or a deterrent to your work?
I think considering what has come up or what I've been able to develop, I'm not opposed to going to school. I think it's a tool. You can always learn the rules. And as my friend Gennaro told me, you have to know the rules to break them. Because I don't like rules.
Yeah. Well, through my son, I really learned to appreciate art in a different way. And then instead of just looking at a picture and thinking, oh, that's pretty, mm-hmm. that how political art can be.
Absolutely.
And how... really, I mean, the first time I ever saw a real Van Gogh painting, I burst into tears.
Really?
It was that powerful to me. Seeing Georgia O'Keeffe's work for the first time, the real thing was, you know, just amazing. And then I went to the Whitney during one of the biennial showings, and it was... it was just, you know, like I said, this idea of how political art can be and the stories that people are telling, that there's a deeper level there. So how did this, you already said the Lashes and Lights, that's an upcoming show?
Yes, that's going to be this Saturday on the 17th at Blur.
Okay.
And where's that located?
It's located at 710 Pacific. It's the cross street is Crocker.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can go and check it out.
And how many pieces will be?
Nine.
Uh-huh.
Are they for sale?
Yes, they are going to be for sale.
Okay.
So.
Of course they're going to be for sale. What's the point if they're not?
Bring your checkbook.
Well, just checking. Want to make sure when they come, I love it, you know.
Yes.
They know they got to write a check for
it. Oh, yeah, there is one that's the big eyelash on the cheek that is...
It's out.
There's a lot of them that you would like. A lot of people would like to have, I'm sure. And I would encourage them to check it out. So where do you think you're going now? I know you have a day job and you don't get to work on your art full time, but
right.
where are you in your career? You're just stepping off.
Yeah. This is going to kind of be like the seed level. And I've already started to work on some projects with my partner in crime, Gennaro D'Anda. And we are going to be, we've actually almost completed a short film, so we're also going to be getting into films and that type of genre, that entertainment section. I love all aspects, and I want to learn as much as I can about everything.
So what kind of roles or jobs do you take on in the independent film that you're working on?
Actor.
Uh-huh.
Dancer, performer, and then also behind the scenes. As far as holding the camera and participating in the writing aspect of the scripts.
Do you need a motherly but voluptuous goddess type?
Actually, we do.
Okay, good. I'm available. And Jennifer's also available for
I was going, what media do you use? DV or VHS or film? What do you use?
Both. VHS and DVD.
DVD.
So, okay. Yeah. Everything. Right now it's digital. As far as editing and stuff, it's on VHS. And, you know, we're so rich. We have lots of resources. So.
Yeah, just...
Well, being computer literate, I figured what you have the editing software and everything, right?
Not yet.
Not yet? No.
Not yet. So we need some help.
Anybody that wants to help you with that, huh? Just call in. Okay.
Absolutely.
Or they send you an email.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, do you have a website?
I have a MySpace account right now. I don't have, like, an official website, but that's in the works, and... I have some...
And what's the address for MySpace?
It's www.myspace.com/madstarwonder. That should be it. And you should actually be able to do a search just with the email if you can't find
it. I've never even gone to MySpace. I've heard so much about it. It was like, oh, God, I don't know if I should even look at anything there.
You know, I didn't want to do that in the beginning, but then I found out that everyone's on it, and it's the best... one of the great ways to... network and
uh-huh.
just get to know people. So I want to gear it
unsolicited
more.
Plug for MySpace. Just personal testimony there.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah. So we've been talking to Max Fuente, who is an emerging artist here in Houston. He will have a show at Blur, which is at 710 Pacific Street, opening on the 17th, Lashes and Lights. And, you can bat your eyelashes at him and enjoy the painting. The prints. And maybe a cocktail or two, because you know you are there to get to support the business,
exactly.
Supporting the community. And it's Mad Star Wonder at AOL.com if you would like to find out more. And the magic question: is there anything that we didn't ask you about that you would like to make sure the listeners know?
I think most importantly, I really want to be involved in the community, in the gay community, and not just keep it separate that way. I think ultimately, if we all practice unity and compassion towards each other, I think we're going to be on a better road ahead of us. And I want to be a part of the cause and not the effect.
Yeah, part of the solution, not the problem.
Right.
Yeah. That's
be part of that process, yes.
Yeah, we're great believers in that.
Yes.
Here at
KBFT. You should join the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there's plenty
can
of places.
More information on that?
You certainly can.
Y'all hook up after we get off the air. And so, do you have any other shows that are going to be coming up after the blur?
Actually, there is something else that I'm in the works of producing,
uh-huh.
So
not quite ready.
You're not going to let us know? Just a little hint of some kind?
Well, just let's say, actually I did. I'm also working on a book.
Oh, my gosh. He doesn't have enough to do, this poor child.
How did you forget that one?
I know. I just.
What's the topic of the book?
It's me. But like taking on characters, but in a totally different way. So it's going to be
not that you're self-absorbed or anything.
No, you know what? I think we all are a little self-absorbed.
I think most artists. I mean, look at Van Gogh. I mean, how many self-portraits did he do? Toulouse-Lautrec. I mean, a lot of.
Well, aside from the fact that you
Da Vinci.
I work for myself for free.
Right.
So I don't have to pay somebody.
That's right. You get a good price on the labor there. Yeah. So what is it that you have coming up?
It's a book, and basically I'm going to be taking on different personas. It's kind of like a photo essay.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's going to be, a photo essay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, neat.
So,
does it have a title?
So far, yes, it does, and I have to see if it's taken.
Look,
there's just a few.
Book titles can be the same as other book titles.
Okay, can I say
yes?
Of course you can.
Okay. We see what we want to see.
Oh, that's great.
That's great. That is.
I can definitely see that with what I've seen of your work. Well, we really appreciate you being with us tonight on Queer Voices, and lots of luck with your art.
Thank you very much, Diva.
Thank you very much.
I love you, and thank you, KPFT, and thank you, all the listeners.
And I want to thank the Academy and
and
the producer, my agent.
Bye. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Looking through my eyes. Tell me that I don't see what I see, picture in disguise. Could it be you don't know what's inside of me? I'm just like you, I'm in search of the truth. I'm just like you, I'm in search of the truth, yeah.
twice and a track titled Just Like Me. And Dylan is going to be one of the artists appearing at the 2006 Houston Pride Festival, along with K.G. Dennard and Casey Stratton and Taylor Dane. And the Pride Festival this year is going to be Saturday, June 24th. That's the day of the parade. And it's going to be from 2 p.m. until the Pride starts at 8 p.m. For more information, go to pridehouston.org. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 10, 2006. Government leaders on three continents were speaking out this week on the issue of marriage equality, and none had anything good to say about it. In Australia, the government of Prime Minister John Howard announced that it would attempt to overturn the recently enacted civil unions law in the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT. But before the week was up, the ACT legislature shortened the timetable for same-gender couples to take advantage of the new law by amending the Civil Unions Act to change from 1 month to 5 days the notice couples need to give before being civilly united. The first civil union could therefore be celebrated as early as June 15th. Australia's Attorney General Philip Ruddock this week said that his government will use its constitutional power to overturn the law, since it has oversight over territorial legislation. The federal government's position is that civil unions, giving same-gender couples all the rights of marriage, but just not calling them that, violates the country's Marriage Act. The Registrar General's Office for the ACT, which includes the capital city of Canberra, has warned couples that their civil unions may be voided. According to its website, anyone intending to enter into a civil union under the Civil Unions Act 2006 is advised that there is a risk attached to their decision given the current uncertainty with the legislation. Prime Minister John Howard denied his government was homophobic during comments this week on national radio. "We are not anti-homosexual people or gay and lesbian people. It is not a question of discriminating against them. It is a question of preserving as an institution in our society marriage as having a special character," he said.
Meanwhile, though it has no serious chance of passage, the U.S. Republican Party and its leaders trotted out the so-called Federal Marriage Amendment for another exercise in futility this week. Most commentators saw it as the GOP's attempt to feed political hay to its right-wing conservative base in an election year. A similar congressional debate in 2004 was thought to push conservative voters in almost a dozen states to the polls to approve anti-marriage equality ballot measures. President George W. Bush used his weekly Saturday radio address and remarks before a friendly conservative crowd 2 days later to urge passage of the amendment, sounding familiar themes.
"This national question requires a national solution, and on an issue of such profound importance, that solution should come from the people, not the courts. An amendment to the Constitution is necessary because activist courts have left our nation with no other choice."
Calling the president's remarks an immoral attack on gay Americans, Matt Foreman of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force said that using the activist courts and judges catchphrase is not only insulting to the foundation of our republic, but profoundly ironic, given that they come from a man who would not be president at all but for activist judges. Amending the U.S. Constitution requires a two-thirds vote in both houses of Congress and ratification by three-fourths of the states. A procedural Senate move for a formal tally got a 49-48 vote this week, but required 60 ayes, so there was no vote on the actual amendment there. But the Republican leadership isn't finished romancing its right-wing base. They've announced that they'll push the amendment in the House of Representatives next month. Voters in Alabama, by a 4-1 margin this week, approved a state constitutional amendment banning legal recognition of same-gender couples. 19 other U.S. states have approved similar measures.
Canada's new conservative leader, Stephen Harper, this week said his campaign promise to revisit the marriage equality issue in Parliament won't be realized for a few more months. The announcement comes on the heels of many conservative MPs saying they consider the matter settled, said a statement from Canadians for Marriage Equality. "And we think Mr. Harper should move on." The group says the vote could be held sooner and rather quickly, but that Harper's delay is designed to give right-wing groups more time to lobby their MPs before a parliamentary vote to reconsider the issue is held. Few pundits believe there's a realistic chance for federal marriage equality legislation to be repealed in Canada, and some charge that Harper is only following the lead of Australia's Howard and the U.S.'s Bush by pandering to conservative voters.
The Vatican continued its now frequent attacks on gays and lesbians this week, calling same-gender marriage, abortion, and a host of other practices it sees as threats to the so-called traditional family, the eclipse of God. Its 60-page document called Family and Human Procreation said the family was under attack around the world, even in traditionally Christian cultures, by what it called radical currents proposing new family models. It listed these threats as giving same-gender couples legal recognition equal to married heterosexuals, lesbians the right to bear children through artificial insemination, and gays and lesbians the right to adopt children. The coalition of recently installed Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi has promised some form of legal recognition for same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples, but has stopped short of calling it marriage. Prodi reprimanded one of his ministers in late May for publicly discussing the matter, and two other ministers for talking about other Vatican-sensitive issues. "There's a need to get our heads down and speak only when a decision has been made," he said.
We've reached the peak of Pride season around the world, and gays and lesbians in overwhelmingly Roman Catholic Poland won the right to stage Pride parades in late May when the country's Supreme Administrative Court upheld a ruling against Poznan's mayor, who had banned last year's parade. Queers and their supporters marched in that western Polish city anyway and were pelted with eggs and stones. 75 Pride marchers were arrested, but courts later refused to prosecute them. Defiant Pride marchers in the southern city of Krakow faced similar egg and rock throwers earlier this year. Other Polish officials, including President Lech Kaczynski when he was mayor of Warsaw, also banned or attempted to ban Pride parades. The court ruling applied nationwide, so current Warsaw officials had no choice but to allow several thousand LGBT people and their supporters to march for Pride there on June 10th. Politicians and activists from several countries demonstrated international solidarity by taking part in the Equality Parade through the heart of the Polish capital. Unlike Pride events elsewhere in Europe in recent weeks, the event was relatively peaceful, as some 2,000 police officers prevented about 100 egg-throwing skinheads from directly confronting the marchers as they gathered in a counter-demonstration at the start of the parade route.
51 protesters were arrested on June 3rd at the second annual Pride parade in Bucharest, Romania, after they threw bottles, rocks, and eggs at the marchers. Police had to use tear gas to restrain the opponents, and 10 people were reportedly injured in the melee. More than 1,000 protesters, including nuns and priests carrying crosses, confronted the 500 marchers. Other opponents threw eggs from balconies along the parade route. Reminiscent of the previous week's event in Moscow that had a similar but more injurious outcome, several activists from across Europe also marched in solidarity with local Romanian activists who, carrying multicolored flags and singing patriotic songs, demanded legal protections from discrimination and marriage equality.
Gays and lesbians are under increasing attack in many parts of Eastern Europe. Last July, hundreds of police officers had to protect a few dozen rights demonstrators from an angry mob in the Latvian capital, Riga. And the mayor of Chisinau, Moldova, issued an outright ban on a Pride event in his city last month. Zsolt Semjen, the leader of Hungary's Christian Democratic People's Party, used homophobic rhetoric to attract votes in that country's recent elections. "If you want your son to have his first sexual experiences with a bearded older man," he notoriously said, "you should vote for the Liberals." And the openly gay Dutch ambassador to Estonia said this week that he was leaving his post because of the constant homophobic and racist harassment and threats his black Cuban-born partner had been subjected to on the streets of Tallinn.
But several hundred people staged the first ever Pride parade in the Indian Ocean nation of Mauritius on May 20th. Reports say many onlookers were shocked by the demonstration in a busy shopping area. According to the Reuters news agency, drag queens led the parade wearing feather boas and high heels. The country's Attorney General, Rama Valaitan, called the march a new page in the history of Mauritius, the page of freedom.
And finally, in the northern California city of Los Altos, the downtown area was awash in rainbow-colored flags and balloons on June 4th in that city's controversial first-ever Pride Parade. An estimated 300 people walked the eight-block route, cheered on by a sparse but exuberant crowd of supporters lining the sidewalks and providing non-stop applause. The Los Altos Gay Straight Alliance, or GSA, organized the parade after the city council voted in February to ban proclamations regarding sexual orientation and went on record as being opposed to a pride event. 16-year-old Los Altos GSA co-president Nicolette Bocalan said at the post-parade rally that there is a silent youth here that is afraid to be anything but silent. This parade is as much for giving them hope as it is for celebrating our own pride.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending June 10th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
again Dylan Rice, one of this year's Houston Pride Festival artists, with a cut called March of the Misunderstood. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
LSR Saliba.
Yes, and we're here tonight. We've got Corbin, who is a female-to-male transgender, who operates the site trannyboy.com. And I went to that today. Mm-hmm. Corbin, welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
I went to your site today, and I was fascinated by that. And being an M-to-F, male-to-female, mm-hmm. I didn't realize what you girls to guys had to go through.
Oh yeah, it's a similar process.
Now the question always comes, I get it, so I put it to you, when did you first know?
Oh gee, that's one of the most common questions that I'm asked.
Well, that's mine too, so I figured I'd start off with that one.
I would say I had hints of it when I was a kid, but I didn't really have a name to put to it until I was a teenager. So when I was about 14, I came out as a lesbian. And then, the feelings got stronger, and I finally was able to identify it as being transsexual. And I later came on out when I was, I believe, 19 as trans. So that's when I was able to put a name to it and say, okay, this is what I am. I'm not just a lesbian or whatnot.
Which coming out was harder for you?
I was more nervous about coming out as trans than I was as a lesbian, but actually it was easier coming out as trans.
How did your partners react?
My partner, Jesse, who was my partner for 3 years, she was, kind of nervous about it. She identifies as a lesbian, so she's real interested in women. And the idea of me going through hormones and my body changing was very tough on her. But all in all, she was very supportive toward it.
Good.
How did your friends react, though? Because originally you did start out as a lesbian, and how did that affect your standing in the lesbian community?
Oh, well, most of my friends were real cool with it. I only had one negative response, but all in all, they were pretty good. I started to, when we go out to the lesbian bars, get uncomfortable after transitioning because I felt like I was being treated like the straight boy, the strange straight man that was coming in and invading the lesbian territory. So at some point, I pretty much stopped going to the lesbian bars.
Well, that makes sense. That's like to be a transsexual female and going to a lesbian bar, they treat you differently than a genetic. So I understand that. We end up being somewhat on the sidelines.
Yeah, which is tough to see,
When did you start your website?
I started the website when about just before I started hormones. It was in November 2003.
How easy was it to start? I mean, I know, like, personally, I don't have many photos of myself during transition just because I found it a little disturbing.
No, I didn't find it disturbing. Actually, it was intriguing and a lot of fun to chronicle it. Over time, when taking a bunch of photos and putting them up, what we would do is we would put photos up every month to show the progression of changes that the testosterone brought on. And it was neat to see. And really, I did it more for the other guys out there because there weren't very many websites that were completely informative and had good diaries.
Yeah, your site is rather complete. Pretty much everything except for surgical videos and legal advice. I mean, one of the issues faced with trans sites is a lot of people, when they do the transition or when they're done, they drop off the scene. How come you haven't?
That's a good question. I'd rather not blend in with the crowd. This is a very important part of my past, and maybe someday it'll lose that life, but now it still has it. It's good to talk to trans guys around and get their feedback and know that I'm helping other guys.
Now, we were talking earlier, and so I want you to repeat that. About how many hits on your site do you get in a day?
We've been getting about 500 or 600.
Well, that's pretty amazing for females to males, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say it was a surprise when we started the site. Actually, the hits have dropped because I changed the website format and kind of messed it up. But other than that, yeah, it's about 500 or 600 a day.
Well, that's typical of a guy, you know, to, when it's fixed, go on and fix it again.
Right, exactly.
It's not broken, but go fix it. Okay. You are becoming a guy. Well, and how are things going in your love life, you know? Is it, I don't want to be too personal, I will.
You know, it hasn't really caused that many complications. My girlfriend and I did break up recently. We broke up about 3 weeks ago.
Well, that means you're available?
Yes.
Oh, how do you contact you? You can through your website, right? Okay.
Yes. And it wasn't a bad breakup. You know, it was more of like, you know, maybe we should break up because we've become more friends than anything. And that was about it. That.
Was she entirely comfortable with becoming involuntarily straight?
I don't know if I would call it involuntarily becoming straight, but you know, I think she was just more concerned about like the physical. I looked a lot different, sounded different. I think I even act different. I became more confident over time and a lot more outgoing than I was initially.
Do you think that's part of the hormones? Or is that just a matter of your attitude being comfortable with who you are?
Right. I think it's a matter of my attitude and finally knowing that I look the way that I've always wanted to look, and I'm no longer insecure in that matter.
And again, you were talking, what is it, 14 or so that you came out as a lesbian and then 19 as trans. What did you discover in those 5 years that made you realize you were trans?
Well, you know, part of it was a process. I grew up in a fairly conservative part of Houston. I grew up in Jersey Village, and I just wasn't exposed to the gay community. And so when I started going out, you know, and coming in town, and finally I went off to college here at U of H, and it's then when I really got in touch with the LGBT community, and they helped to kind of enlighten me. And it's when I learned, okay, this is what a transsexual is, and there is such a thing as a female-to-male transsexual that I put two and two together.
Have you felt comfortable at U of H? Because I know U of H doesn't currently have any protections for transgenders.
Right. No, I've felt very comfortable there. I've gotten I've gotten a lot of help and support from my coworkers and whatnot. It's been a great environment.
Good. And knowing that we may have some other females to males or females out there that have these feelings they can't seem to put a name to, what advice would you give them? What do they need to look for to find out if they're really trans or just, you know, maybe just a masculine female?
You know, I get a lot of those questions on the site. Am I trans? I have some feelings of wanting to be male, and that's something that I can't answer for them. Obviously, they have to answer that for themselves. But when I really started questioning it, deep down I knew that I was, but I took it with my girlfriend's support step by step. So one night I would go out, and the next night I would go out and bind my breasts down, and little by little, you know, I started. She'd say I would glow when I was dressed, and I knew I was glowing. So that's when it really hit my heart, and I knew this is what I want. And I would look at the pictures of the guys that have transitioned, and I'd meet them, and it was such an amazing transformation, and it was right in front of me. It's like I could reach out and just press a button and grab it.
I found that because I have known in my time in the community a number of females to males, mm-hmm. and after that transition and the growth, and they become so comfortable in themselves that in many ways they seem to be more of a man than most genetic men.
I suppose that's an interesting look at it. I haven't thought about that before. But I do know that a lot of FTMs early in transition will they will masculinize so much that they almost exaggerate and make kind of a parody of men. It's a lot of fun to watch, and I know I did it, you know.
Well, I've seen that too. I went into what looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger coming into a place, and I think that I can only equate that to being a male to female, mm-hmm. in that you go through that period where you're almost an exaggeration of right. the gender that you're seeking, mm-hmm. but once you get comfortable, you sort of settle into, really, it's all about who you are.
Right. And I also had to learn how to socially interact. I didn't have that down. I didn't know how males and males interacted. And I think at first, well, they still all take me to be a gay man, I try to say that without a lisp. But, yeah, they still try, they take me as a gay man. But before, I think they thought I was a little strange, and I didn't know how, you know, I figured, walk into a men's restroom, it's a fiesta in there, just like in a women's restroom. No, not the case. So it took a lot of learning social situations again.
Yeah. Did you go out, did you have anybody mentoring you in any way?
No.
So you just
did. Yeah, there were a couple guys that I knew around, but they weren't real close friends. So
what, do you feel that you have a place in the gay and lesbian community these days, or where do you see yourself?
No, I definitely feel like I have a place in the gay and lesbian community. I think a lot of times now I'm not identified by lesbians anymore in the same manner. Before it was like a welcome hand, and now I don't think they, because I physically look like a male, there's kind of a cutoff until they know for sure. And then once they know that I'm trans, it's all good.
Oh, so are you comfortable with that, though? I mean, do you miss being a lesbian?
No. I mean, yes. I don't know. I mean, I miss being able to walk into the lesbian bar and feel at home, like I had this own place. But in the end, I have developed a lot of friends at different locations, and so it was just an alternative place.
Well,
now.
Then I'll ask the question. It says, are you looking for that straight female, male, heterosexual type relationship then? Heterosexual, yeah. In quotes, by the way.
Right, heterosexual in quotes, yeah. Yeah, I'm interested purely in women, and to me it is kind of a heterosexual setup, but with a queer edge.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Heterosexual with a queer edge. That's good. I like that. Is there anything that we haven't asked that you might want to get there? Because we haven't even talked about your site and how much benefit it has for people, but go ahead.
Oh, about the site? Well, the... Yeah. The site offers information for female-to-male transsexuals, and we provide not only links to surgeons and endocrinologists and anything else that you could possibly need to transition, but we also give detailed diaries and whatnot so that they know, okay, if I take testosterone, what's going to happen to me and what's not going to happen to me. And so it is a very fantastic resource, and it's good for anyone else just to learn.
That's www.tranny, that's TrannyBoi.com.
Yeah, not a Y, it's an I.
Yeah, TrannyBoi.com.
Is there, I know, what's going on now? I know you're here visiting with us, but what's going on now that you really want to get the word out about your site and how to help the other FSTAMs out there?
Oh, well, I think, you know, the first part of the process is having someone reach out to you. So that's what we're trying to do with the site. And so we'll be doing the Pride Parade, and we'll probably be handing out brochures and cards. Other than that, we'll just see where it goes. Usually the word tends to get out and go from mouth to mouth. So.
Okay, are there any organizations, support groups? For FDMs?
Yes, there is. There's Houston STAG, but I believe they joined... they joined another group here in Houston for low attendance temporarily.
Do you know how you could get in touch with them?
I think you can go to www.transhouston.com. That's TransHouston.com. And they have a meeting list, I think Monday nights at 7 o'clock down at the Bering Church.
Do you feel that there is a FTM community in Houston?
Not really, no. There are FTMs. But there's definitely, it doesn't seem like there's a crowd enough for a full-blown community.
And now, and then that prompts the question, what percentage are the FDMs? Is it a small percentage of females to males to actually identify themselves as transsexual, or is it, or is there a lot of them? I know from my own experience, it seems like they're not as many, but what do you think?
They're around. They tend to blend into the woodwork just because once they take hormones, you just can't identify them from visually. I think, if I recall correctly, the statistics were something like 2 in 10 transsexuals, I believe.
Actually, it feels like 50-50 to me, just because of, you know, the way I came out in my experience, so.
Okay.
Well, I think, I've heard that statistic, too. About 20% of all transsexuals are FDMs.
Mm-hmm. I have ran into, overall, I've met a lot more FDMs that are young. I've met very few over the age of 40 or 50. Yeah, most of them have been in their 20s.
Do you feel that's just part of the whole transgender generational divide? I mean, I've noticed with a lot of people born before the 80s that they'll kind of stay out of the GLBT community entirely, but people born during the 80s tend to come into it.
I would say that's probably true. Also, I think we're a lot more open about it, being that many of us are on university campuses, and so we have access to GLBT organizations that are on campus. Whereas if you're a little older, you may be in the working environment, and that makes it a lot more difficult when you have a career to navigate that.
Corbin, I want to thank you. Give us their website again.
www.trannyboy.com.
Thank you so much. And we've been talking with Corbin, female-to-male transsexual, and this is Queer Voices.
Pride Festival artist, that is Casey Stratton, with her song Wild Soul. And now it's time for that part of the show that we prosaically call News and Events.
That's right.
Is that what we call it?
Well, isn't that what's on the list here?
Well, listen, I have to tell you, there's something that's new and exciting going on in Houston.
What is that?
I went to the premiere Friday night of Lucy Lysistrata.
Yes.
And my side still hurt from laughing. This is a brilliant production, well performed.
And where is it? So
it's playing at Stages. Is an Unhinged production. It was written by our good friend Stuart Zuckerbrod. And if you go to the Stages website, that you can get information, or you can call 713-527-8243. That may just be for the one that is, that there's been some benefits for several different groups, and I'm not sure if that's for the Chamber of Commerce benefit or, but anyway, check the Stages website, or Unhinged Productions, and you'll find it. Lucy Lysistrata is just wonderful. It's just wonderful. Yep. And then also saw the Gay Men's Chorus on Saturday. The Turtles on the Bayou with the Turtle Creek Corral from Dallas. And it was marvelous. A wonderful performance. I mean, you can tell that Pride Month is really going strong.
I understand they raised a lot of money for the charities, too.
Yes.
That night. Yes. Another thing for Pride, on Wednesday, 7 to 8:30 at Rouge, the National Gay and Lesbian Journalists Association is having a reception, and Sue Lovell and
Anise Parker.
I don't know if Anise is going to be there. Alan Cohen's going to be there.
Yeah.
And then
Jennifer Poole from the caucus.
President of the GLBT Political Caucus is going to say a few words, yeah, too.
And the mayor guy.
The mayor guy is going to be there. Who Bill White?
Yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, Bill White. Yeah. I remember him. Are going to be there. If you've got the time, please come out. One thing that's really not local, but was in The Voice and all, is Lifetime, sort of a segue from our last film. There's a new, it's on Monday, June 19th at 8 p.m. Videotape it so you don't miss our show, A Girl Like Me. And
it's on Lifetime Network, and it's the story of a young boy. It says, when your son believes he's meant to be a girl, you challenge him, you fight him. You accept him. You love her. That's
absolutely. Really, amen to that.
And then,
that's going out to my family that don't do that.
Uh-huh. And another bit of local news is we got a lovely letter of appreciation from the Kindred Spirit Celebration Committee, because we had Marion Coleman come on to talk about the Kindred Spirits reunion. They even sent us a certificate of appreciation suitable for framing. And they say, mark your calendars for April 27th, 2007, because that will be the next celebration.
I don't even have a calendar for 2007.
Well, we'll have to start. Okay. We have to have all those PDAs and things.
A thank you went out from the Houston Transgender Unity Committee. The party they had at Meteor on
Saturday,
which
I didn't get to make it to.
On Saturday, raised some money, good money for the scholarship fund. So thank all of you who showed up and donated to the scholarship fund.
And thank all of you who have pledged during our fund drive. Please make sure you pay your pledge. Or you can go online at www.kpft.org and see about becoming a listener sponsor to this fine community radio station. We're going to play some music and be back in just a moment with Blue House. And Glenn, you want to give the station ID?
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Sing if you're glad to be gay, sing if you're happy. This way. Lost your love.
our idea of playing Houston Pride Festival artists. That was K.J. Dennert and a song called She Loves You. This is Queer Voices.
And now for one of our favorite parts of Queer Voices, queer music. And J.D. is off at the Out Music Awards, so I'm doing kind of double duty tonight, trying to feature some performers who are in town that are of interest to our community.
You're always doing double duty.
Thank you, Jennifer. Tomorrow night at the Mucky Duck, Blue House will be performing. Is this your first time in Houston?
No.
We've played at the Monkey Duck a couple of times before. Yeah. We're regulars of Rusty's down there.
I see. And you're?
I'm Jackie.
And?
Bernadette.
Okay. And they're talking to me, Deborah Bell. And we're going to have a real treat because they are going to perform. But just, are you trotting the globe? Are you based in this country now? What's the deal?
What's the deal? Well, no, we're based in Australia still. And we travel over here. Mm-hmm. Every so often to do a tour.
That's a long trip.
We leave the southern hemisphere so we don't have to have winter every year.
I see. That's a good way to play it.
Perfect.
Yeah, except right now you're enduring the Houston heat.
Oh, the Houston heat is better than the winter Melbourne cold.
Is this true?
Absolutely. It's near 0 degrees there.
So it's a snowbirds of a different type.
Well, actually, we don't get snow. Just very, very chilly weather.
Ah.
Lots of wind. Yeah.
Like Seattle.
Yeah,
Seattle without
snow.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Yeah, so isn't that the best of... No. No.
So do you have a term that you use for the type of music that you perform? Mm.
Well,
wow. Term. Yes, Blue House.
Blue House, yes, Blue House. Yeah. But it's folk.
Is it the blues?
No, it's not the blues.
And it's not house.
No, it's neither. But we thought we'd call ourselves something totally confusing to the audience. So we do folk pop, and it's all original. So it's a lot of harmony stuff. And we go from everything from ballads to pretty raunchy sort of gear. So.
Oh, good.
So what are you going to sing for us tonight?
What would you like, lovely ladies? Because what we can do is either give you something mellow, we don't know how the crowd feels on a Monday night, or we can give you something quite raucous and a little bit up.
I think we might start with mellow and finish with raucous.
Okay.
You know,
no, we can
give
do
them
that.
Something to look forward to. Now, you both write the music and the words,
yes,
the lyrics,
yeah.
And how did you get together to begin with?
Well, we met at a pub.
We met in a bar.
I had to ask, should have known.
Yes, it was the local gay bar.
Yeah.
What was the name of the bar?
It's called the Glass House.
The Glass House.
In Melbourne?
But it's not the Blue House.
No, is that funny?
No, it isn't. We broke a few glasses, so we only had blues left after that. So
I see. Well, what's the name of this number?
This song is called I'll Find You. It's off our latest CD called These Days.
Okay, we'll let you go with it, and then we'll talk some more.
I flew and I drove and I walked to the ends of the earth, searching for something new. Was my way through my life, longing for that special love. I feel now I've changed and I've woken up to something inside, that I can be proud of. Well, I'm never gonna change my ways, 'cause I like myself better these days. And I'll find you, I'll find you. I will find you. It's just taking me a little longer. Oh, la 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 la. To come and shine upon your face. When that morning comes, I will open up the doors to my heart, and you walk into that space.
And gentlemen, it's Blue House. And in this Luau studio over the years, there's been people like Holly Near and Mick Christian and Chris Williamson and you name them in women's music.
Royalty!
True. So now you've added Blue House to that.
Thank you.
Theron. I can't forget Theron. JD just did an incredible interview with her that's available on his Queer Music Heritage site. How many CDs do you have?
We actually have 3 full-length CDs. We have 2 with us tomorrow night, our very first release called Big, and our latest release that we recorded in New York City called These Days. So.
Now, if we wanted to order it or get them, do you have a website that we can go to?
Yep. It's www.bluehouse.net.
Net.
Not net. Com.
Not net. Net.
Get caught in the net.
Bluehousenet.net. Yep. And do you feel like your music has any kind of special message or theme that you like to try to get out to the world?
Well, we never think about sending out a message to the world, but what seems to be recurring in our music is the same story that everyone goes through. It's fall in love and lose your love at the end of it somewhere. So,
and fall in love
and
again.
Fall in love again.
So, get angry.
That's right. Yeah. So hopefully we're serial monogamists and we can keep writing love songs. And songs about breaking up. So it's always good.
Always material. That's the revenge, you know, writing the song playing it all over the world.
When did y'all first start performing? Me together.
Take it away, baby. We were fetuses.
Yeah.
We've been playing for a very long time.
It's been hard with guitar.
Very, very difficult.
Ago.
Very difficult.
I was talking about playing music.
Oh, okay. Oh, dear. That's a while back, maybe 10 years we've actually been playing together.
Easy.
Most of Houston knows us as a trio. We have one third of our trio has left the what is now a duo to stay home and start a family back in Australia. So it'll be different for the people that haven't seen us at the Mucky Duck for about a year. They'll notice a slight difference in
the loss. They'll say someone's not here.
They will.
That's right.
We might have a cardboard cutout now, just to remind them.
Now, do you think you'll continue as a duo, or do you think you might expand again to it?
Well, I think it will. It's fantastic, actually, because now we've got free rein for our 16 other personalities to come out. Okay. So I don't think we need to be anything but a duo for as long as we possibly can be.
You never had any rain for that.
I didn't, actually, no, did never. I?
Oh, yes, I did too.
Who said you did? No, I never.
It's great being schizophrenic, huh?
I don't know.
I wouldn't know. That's my friend. Hey.
And do you feel like there's a way your music has evolved since you first started in any particular direction?
I think it's gotten better, hopefully.
I don't know. I would say it has. We've grown up too.
We have.
In our music. We've been more comfortable with what we're writing and saying to people and singing. It's been one hell of a journey.
I think we're getting more personal. I think our stories are getting more personal, therefore people are relating to them really, really well, especially with the new material. Everyone's going, wow, that sounds like my story. So I think when you are prepared to be vulnerable as a writer,
or maybe we just start explaining to relate it better.
Maybe we're being clearer.
Yeah.
Well, I think when it's something people relate to, that really is the trick to the whole thing. Is there a particular favourite song?
Well, that last song is my particular favourite.
Yes, I really like it too. But yep. My other personality is like other ones.
Me too. It depends what mood you're in. All of our songs don't sound the same, and we do various styles, so it depends on what mood you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. I think all my personalities are going to like all you songs.
Oh, and how many have you got?
What song that you do live gets the most reaction from the audience?
Probably I Go think, No Further, yeah. Would, which is a particularly loud song.
It is loud. It's loud in very that loud.
We sing it with great passion.
We do.
And it's almost an angry song, which gets an amazing reaction from people because you don't see that often on the stage. So,
is there a story behind it?
There is, isn't there?
There is. We went to... It's kind of a long and involved story, but I'll shorten it for the radio. we went to England and we were promised... We had started working with an agent. He'd promised us 32 gigs in 2 months, I think it was. So it was a fairly good run. We'd had some people... Well, we'd asked some people to check him out and all of that sort of stuff. We... For three Australians to get to England is no mean feat, especially as we're an independent band, so we had to pay for everything ourselves. Went over there, and there was not one gig. He had stiffed us, and not one. So basically, we had a return ticket. We couldn't get home any earlier. We had to go on the dates that we'd specified, and we were living in London, which is one of the most expensive cities to live in if you have no money. And we'd hocked everything
any
to get over
place
there.
If you have no money.
So it was fairly angry sort of a song about people using and abusing you,
right,
and how it would feel like to be ultimately used and abused was what the song was about.
And you also came out with some wonderful recipes for 101 uses for chicken bones, which was
half a carcass, a carrot, and an onion.
And an onion.
You can live. You can live like a king.
Yes. Well, hopefully none of us will have to face that. Again, you've been listening to Blue House. They'll be at the Mucky Duck tomorrow night. Great place about the Mucky Duck. Intimate atmosphere. Yeah. No smoke.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And great fun time and fun people. And unfortunately, I don't have the number on me, but you can look it up. The Mucky Duck on Norfolk, very near Kirby. And so we're going to go out with what's the name of this number?
Well, this is a song to teach everyone that's considering dating a musician to think twice about that.
Deborah, this is your revenge song.
It is. It's a revenge song. It's a song that has all of the words you'd wish you'd said to somebody after you'd broken up with them.
Yeah.
In a very sort of tongue-in-cheek style, but very serious, in fact.
It's called What's Been Going On, and in brackets, You Really Should Have Told Me.
Yes. Yes.
Close brackets.
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Okay.
So messed up, I just don't know what to say.
Everything was going great until you upped and walked away. And now my mind's filled up with thoughts I hate to think. And I'm drowning. I'm sinking. It's all about you. Been going on. You really should have told me. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I walked into a disaster and I watched you disappear. I didn't read the warning signs or understand your fear. It doesn't seem right, it doesn't seem fair to leave without a fight.
Like you don't care.
Yeah, it's all about you. My friends would call me back. My heart's so heavy, it's getting hard to breathe. And I'm torn apart to think that you don't think about me. It's all about you.
At the Mucky Duck. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
All right. And now we're going to go this way to This Way Out.
Are the survivors in long-term gay and lesbian relationships entitled to the pensions that their partners paid for? That's the question in a case heard by the Supreme Court of Canada in mid-May. Legendary Toronto activist George Hislop began a crusade to win Canadian pension plan survivor benefits after his partner of 28 years, Ron Shearer, died in 1986. Hislop himself died last October at the age of 78, but the case continued in his name and those of four co-claimants. Hislop et al., the Attorney General of Canada, appears to be both a demand for basic fairness and a complex case involving sometimes technical legal issues, as the plaintiff's lead attorney, Douglas Elliott, explained recently during a conversation with This Way Out correspondent, Heather Kitching.
Just for people who don't know the whole story behind the case, perhaps I could get you to just fill us in really quickly the history of it.
Yes, well, the Canada Pension Plan has been around since 1966, and queer people have always paid equal premiums into the plan from the beginning. And from the beginning of the plan, there's always been a survivor's pension paid to those who are the survivors of conjugal relationships. However, it always excluded same-sex couples until the year 2000, when Parliament decided, after a series of losses in the courts, that they were going to have to extend rights to same-sex couples across the board. And with respect to the Canada Pension Plan, they included same-sex couples, but unlike other provisions they were amending, they put in a restriction and said that it would only apply to same-sex couples whose partners had died after January 1st, 1998, and that even for those who were being included, instead of starting the pensions 1 month after the date of death, which is the case for opposite-sex couples, it would start in August of 2000, which cut out many, many years of pensions for a lot of people. As a result of that, we started a class action. It was launched originally simultaneously in British Columbia and in Ontario. We were successful at trial. On appeal, the Ontario Court of Appeal upheld the entitlement of same-sex couples to pensions, but then also said that estates were not going to be able to collect the pensions. So as a result of that, federal government appealed to the Supreme Court of Canada saying that the same-sex couples should get nothing. Mm-hmm. And we appealed saying that the estates should be entitled to collect, and also that if the same-sex couples were entitled to pensions, they should get the same amount as opposite-sex couples. That is going back to 1 month following the date of death, and that was the appeal that was heard in the Supreme Court of Canada.
So just to clarify, heterosexual estates can collect the pension?
The estate problem only crops up if you don't apply for the pension while you're alive.
Oh, I see.
And the reality is that most heterosexuals do apply while they're alive. The rule says that if you haven't applied while you're alive and your estate doesn't apply within 1 year of the date of death, you get nothing. Well, that almost never happens with straight people because they normally apply while they're alive. Of course, in the case of our group, there's a very large number of people who knew that it was really pointless to try and apply because the law didn't actually grant a pension to them.
Gotcha. So how did the hearing go?
I thought it went extremely well. I mean, it's very difficult to predict, of course, because when the judges ask questions, sometimes they're playing devil's advocate and you just don't know what they really think. But I think it's fair to say that Justice Binney was extremely sympathetic to our position, as was Justice Abella and Justice LaBelle, and to a lesser extent Chief Justice McLaughlin, just judging by the questions.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, Justice Rothstein was extremely hostile.
Hmm.
He was very concerned about how much money this was going to cost. He was totally preoccupied with the financial implications of this judgment. My colleague Sharon Matthews from Vancouver said that the cost was 1/1000th of 1%, which is what the evidence was, not from us, but from the government witness. And he said, well, yes, but how much is that in real dollars? And she said, well, it translates into about $80, $85 million. And the Canada Pension Plan made $16 billion in interest last year.
Hmm.
So $85 million to the Canada Pension Plan is a drop in the bucket.
Hmm.
And Justice Bastarash, although he had a bit of a concern about the financial implications, he was more, I think, concerned about the general proposition that, you know, Parliament had fixed the law, and even if the fix that they had made in 2000 was imperfect and hadn't helped everyone, well, they fixed it, and shouldn't the courts just let them fix it the way they wanted to and not interfere?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I'm not too optimistic that we will find Justice Rothstein and Justice Bastarash ruling in our favor, but that's only two out of seven judges, and all we need is four.
Well, isn't there something to be said about the fact that we all paid into it anyway? It's our money.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's the other issue, of course, is that even if it was going to cost money, as I said to Justice Rothstein, the question is, should someone like George Hislop have to die in poverty because it's going to cost money?
Mm-hmm.
Because if insignificant cost is enough to justify discrimination, well, you can imagine in future discrimination cases, the government will stand up every time and say, well, there's a cost here, and that's enough according to the Hislop case. Therefore, we're allowed to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
There are people alive today who are living in very difficult financial circumstances because they're not getting the pension that their partner paid for.
Mm-hmm. So, Doug, did the court give any inclination or indication as to when they're going to rule on this?
No, they did not. They almost never do.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that it will be at least 2 months and maybe as much as 6 months before they decide. I should say to any of your listeners who did have partners who contributed to the Canada Pension Plan who died before January 1st, 1998, please file your applications now, because if you're holding back, you may actually end up losing money, because we just don't know whether this one-year limit is going to be upheld by the Supreme Court of Canada, and so you're just hurting yourself if you don't get your application in right now.
That was Douglas Elliott, the plaintiff's lead attorney in a lawsuit now being considered by the Supreme Court of Canada demanding equal survivor pension rights for same-gender couples, with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching in Vancouver asking the questions.
This is Queer Voices.
K.J. Dennard, and her cover of Old Susanna. K.J. is one of the artists who will be featured at this year's Houston Pride Festival. Now more from This Way Out.
Woke up this morning at 11:11. Wasn't in Portland, and I wasn't in heaven.
Queer as Folk may be history, but one of its stars is back with a new film. It's called Say Uncle, and This Way Out's Steve Pride is an approving nephew.
Peter Page could have done almost anything after his 5 years on Queer as Folk. He chose to make his feature film directorial and writing debut with a dark comedy about the culture of hysteria and paranoia. The film has humor. There's even a romantic opportunity with a character played by funny man Anthony Clark. But for the most part, Say Uncle tackles a hard topic head on. And it was inspired by something in Peter's own life.
I was living in Portland, Oregon. I was a godfather and sort of one of the primary caregivers to a one-year-old. His family up and moved on me. And that day, the day they left, was one of the more difficult days of my life. I kept sort of joking through the tears that I was going to keep coming to the house and pretending the kid was asleep in the other room and the new tenants were babysitters, and that was that. I wasn't dealing with this. I was just pretending it wasn't happening. And I just started to riff on that. I started to wonder, what does someone who can't deal with grief do when they're faced with that kind of loss? And in my head, he gets himself in a lot of trouble.
In the film, the character Paul is desperate to replace the lost relationship with his godson and pursues opportunities that will bring him in contact with children, working in a toy store, babysitting, adoption. He also passes many hours playing with children at the local playground, but a lone gay man at a playground leads to accusations and neighborhood hysteria. As Peter said, trouble.
I certainly hope it's entertaining, and I certainly hope it's an enjoyable 90 minutes, and I feel, you know, we've really accomplished that, but the message for me of the film is that we are all so afraid of one another that it's reached, a boiling point, and I just can't do it anymore. I just can't be afraid. You know, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, there was the summer of the abduction, that they were counting all the child abductions on the news every night, and that summer there were no more abductions than there were the year before that, or the year before that, or 100 years before that. But we were also afraid that, you know, kids weren't allowed outdoors. And I just think we are really damaging our own experience of the world.
I saw the cutest thing yesterday. Do you remember that guy from a few weeks ago? The one we saw at the other place? You know, the one...
The one we couldn't figure out which kid was his?
Yeah, that's him. So he is in the sandbox with Lindsay and Ashley.
Yeah.
And they're playing something. I don't know what.
Right.
And, so I go over to get Lindsay to take her home for her nap. And, this is so cute. He was trying to get Lindsay to call him Uncle Paul. Isn't that cute, Uncle Paul?
No, that's not cute. That's not cute. That's terrifying. He doesn't have any children.
What?
No kids. I asked him.
Well, who's he been bringing to the playground?
No one.
Then why is he there?
Thanks, Susan.
Oh, my God.
The brave thing about Say Uncle is that it delves into shades of gray. Kathy Najimy's character Maggie, who so fiercely campaigns against Peter Page's character Paul, never becomes a stereotype. She never is really the bad guy. Because, although it's innocent, there is something slightly creepy about Paul's behavior.
Exactly.
Actress Kathy Najimy.
And if there was a single person without a kid at the playground, and again, this has nothing to do with his sexuality. I don't care if he's gay, straight, tranny, bi, doesn't matter. Because we know what we know now about pedophiles and child molestation, we are hypersensitive and aware and fierce about protecting our children. I'm fierce about protecting my child. It's inappropriate to hang out in the playground with no kid and to play without asking the mother and saying who you are and can I play with your kid? Because you know what? I'd say no. God bless you and go off somewhere and do something else. Or to, at one point, a little boy goes into his apartment. Now, again, there's nothing sexual about this character. This character is not interested in kids sexually. We all know that the majority of pedophiles are heterosexual men. That aside, his behavior is inappropriate. And so that's what made it really great for me to play her, because I was never that far away from her point of view.
Paul's inappropriate. Yeah, he's not a bad guy. He's inappropriate. He doesn't have an ability to comprehend the social mores the way that you or I do. He actually has a psychological disorder, which is called cognitive dissonance, which you learn late in the film was caused by sort of a trauma early in his life. But while his behavior is odd and a little creepy, his motivations aren't. And while Kathy's impulse, well, Maggie's impulse is certainly valid and really understandable and would be mine, quite frankly. Maggie is as much a part of me as Paul is. I think people often think because I played Paul that he is who I am in this movie, but I'm also Maggie in this movie. I also am afraid of everything. I also want to control everything. I also want to be heard and mix things up. I certainly, you know, I believe where Maggie comes from. I wouldn't start a citywide campaign because based on a hunch out of a sort of a need of my own to be seen and heard. But yeah, these are two flawed people on a collision course.
I thought Peter was really courageous in writing this because we've all seen a lot of gay films. And because of the rampant homophobia in this country, gay filmmakers tend to make films where the gay people aren't perfect. And it's in response. It's in defense of the homophobia because you don't want to feed the fire anymore of the misinformation of homophobic America. But he took this character and made him flawed. That's really risky.
According to Peter Page, being an openly gay actor is more difficult than being queer behind the camera. There are quite a few out gay writers and directors these days, but out actors are members of a really small club.
I had sort of hoped when I came out that the rules were just going to change, and they haven't. They've changed a little bit. There are some people who are really open to my coming in for roles that people wouldn't conventionally think of me for, and there are some people who aren't. You know, I know my agents face real challenges. I know, you know, during pilot season that they get as many, I don't think so's, as they do, sure, bring them in. So I think that could wear a person down. But it is sort of staggering to me that when you count up the number of openly gay people in this business, in front of the camera, that you get to about 15 and it's really hard to get anywhere else.
This has been a conversation with Peter Page and Kathy Najimy. Say Uncle is from TLA Releasing. More info can be found on the official website, sayunclefilm.com. And as always, you can find information on this and other queer movies at prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Rex Walker, Graham Underhill, Heather Kitching, and Steve Pride contributed program material. You heard music by Rufus Wainwright from the Say Uncle motion picture soundtrack, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to our website to see how you can help keep this program on the air. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KSUA Fairbanks, Alaska, WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Talking to somebody in the studio. Okay, that was Opaline from Casey Stratton, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
And that's one of the Pride Festival performers.
That's right.
Everything Pride you need to know about, go to www.pridehouston.org, and you can volunteer, you can sign up as a friend of Pride with all these kind of special perks, and you can also go to the organization's pages to find out about different groups in the community.
And be sure that it's Saturday the 24th of June, and there's the Pride Festival during the day, and then the Pride Parade at night.
Yes.
So, you know, there's plenty to do. do if all you do is just come and enjoy yourself at the festival and also enjoy yourself at the parade?
But I kid you not. The festival is bigger and better this year, and they do need more volunteers to make it all happen. It's not done by magic.
And again, it's a nighttime festival.
That's
nighttime
right.
Nighttime festival. Also, it's a lot more family-friendly than it once was.
Yes.
You know, the rumors Well, the rumors were, but they're not that way as much anymore.
All that wildness anymore.
Yeah, they have all kinds of things for kids and for families, and I'm excited because Home and Garden TV is going to be there.
Well, it all evolved because, you know, we have families, too.
That's right. And some of them, they're families of different variation, and sometimes they're our families of choice.
Oh, yeah. One quick clarification. In the earlier part, I announced the National Gay and Lesbian Journalists Association meeting on Wednesday, but I've got to say where it was. It's at Rouge, and that's 812 Westheimer.
And that is an event that is free and open to the public.
Absolutely. And it starts at 7 till 8:30, so it gives you plenty of time to go and do something else.
And what is Rouge? Is it like a nightclub or something?
It's a nightclub.
Okay.
Yes, it's a club. And
the artists that we had on earlier, they're going to be at the Mucky Duck, right?
Yes, tomorrow night.
Yes, okay. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
And we have, since it is Pride Month, at Theater Suburbia, Judy Reeves, who's the chair of the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender History, GCAM, is directing All Dressed Up and Nowhere to Go, a dark comedy with a twist by Catherine Fulux. That's probably not the way you say that name. It'd probably be French, and you say Fulux. Catherine Fulux.
Don't speak French around me.
Every Friday and Saturday night in June at Theater Suburbia, 1410 West 43rd Street near Ella. You can call 713-682-3525 for tickets and reservations, or go to theatersuburbia.com, and that is theater with an R-E.
Yes, and Queer Voices will scoop all the other media in town, sort of, kind of. We're going to have next week an interview with Julia Oliver, the sergeant at the Houston PD, who is transitioning from male to female. This will be her first time that she can come on a show and tell her side of the story outside of the normal media. I say normal, that, you know, they
say mainstream.
Mainstream, mean stream.
Which is shallow and wide. And slow moving.
No, I think I said it right, the mainstream.
Yeah,
I wasn't real happy with some of the way they were treated. I got a call while I was in Fort Worth for a comment.
And you were in Fort Worth for the state Democratic convention.
Yes, I was. I was a delegate for the convention and elected the new state chairman, Boyd Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Among other things,
there was a lot of resolutions and some other stuff, which will all come out in the press. You can always go to the website for that.
For the Democratic Party.
Yes. You can start planning early if you want to. July 5th is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and Ellen Cohen will be speaking that night. It starts at 7 o'clock. It's at the Community Center, which is 3400 Montrose, Suite 207.
And, you know, this community has so much going on, and there's things still to be done building up to the actual festival and parade, so you can volunteer right now for that.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many volunteers.
Yeah.
Any of the sites.
I think the softball season has wind down, so some more people are available.
Well, I know Equality Houston needs volunteers for the parade. The political caucus does, too, which you can contact the political caucus. We all need volunteers for Pride, and it gives you a chance to get in and do some things and enjoy and work for the community. Be part of the process.
And meet some fun people.
Especially fun people.
And, well, you know, with Gay Games coming up in July, this year a group of people are getting together for the Pride Parade. And so instead of having, say, the softball people and then the volleyball people and then the soccer people and then the rugby people, I think from what I'm hearing, everybody's getting together and they're doing this sort of Team Houston
team
thing.
Team Houston, that's
yes.
right.
Yes, because of
All
the
right.
Gay Games coming up.
Go Team Houston. And, you know, I've had it on my list that I need to book them in before they take off. They were here here a few months ago talking about getting ready, but before we should give them a send-off, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
There's going to be swimmers and weightlifters and billiard players and volleyballers and basketballers and everything.
Well, I thought it was interesting that forming Team Houston and the whole gay athletic movement here in the city was part of the quote-unquote gay agenda that was, I thought it was rather interesting. We always get accused of having the gay agenda.
And we do have an agenda.
That's right, we do. It's about equality and fairness.
Which I think you can find on that same PrideHouston.org website.
You certainly can. So when you hear people talking about the gay agenda, you can go read it.
Yeah. And see what it really is.
Exactly. And speaking of, things like that, when you're out there paying for that $3 gasoline, just remember that ExxonMobil is refusing to budge on its GLBT equal rights. They want our money. They want us to buy their gas, but they want to treat us like second-class citizens.
So maybe we should go to some other gas station for $3 a gallon.
Do I hear boycott?
I would never say boycott. No. I would just say that be thoughtful about where you buy your gasoline.
That's right.
There you go.
It's hard to keep up with all the companies that we don't want to give money to because of their politics or whatnot.
Yes, like the Republican Party.
For example. Speaking as a person, as yourself, and because we don't on KPFT, of course, make any political endorsements. We just talk about issues and let people make up their minds about who they want to support, although we are free to give our own opinion. And we just have to make sure we let people know that that's what it is, our opinion.
That's right, what it is.
Even though it is the right one.
I thought that's why I said what I did about the Exxon, just announcing that they had reviewed our rights.
People are informing the community.
That's right.
And speaking of opinions, did you walk away with my closing script?
Uh-oh.
Oh, my gosh. Well, one other thing. One of my favorite actresses from Moonlighting Sybil Shepherd is going to be on the L Word this next season.
Is she
going
to be a lesbian?
I hope so.
I wish.
You know,
that woman is much more beautiful in real life than she is in any picture.
Oh,
I tell you.
Well, Bruce now has Demi Moore, so.
No. She's with Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, I can't keep up with all of them.
Some people have no life. Well, let's thank the folks that were on tonight. Max Sente, the wonderful artist that has his show coming up this weekend at Blur.
Oh, and Corbin, who has trannyboy.com. That's TrannyBoi.com for information on female-to-male transsexuals.
Next week, we will have... Oh, and of course, Blue House. Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
Don't forget
Thanks
Blue
so
House.
Much.
Mucky Duck tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
Okay, next week, we'll be talking about the preview for the Pride Festival and the parade. Joan Devlin has an interview that was rescheduled with David Shear and Karen Avi, editors of American Queer Now and Then. As usual, we'll have This Way Out.
And a special interview with Julia Oliver, who is the sergeant of the HPD who is transitioning from male to female.
Good night. Have a great week, and thank you for listening to Queer Voices.
Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.